Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another podcast episode of Mysterious Headlines. This is the podcast where we discuss missing person cases and cases where victims still deserve justice. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button wherever it is you are listening to this podcast so that you can be notified every time a new podcast episode is uploaded. You can also review this podcast on whatever platform you're listening to it on. This helps me out tremendously, letting me know what you think about the podcast, and it helps boost my listenership. Today, we're going to be continuing the coverage of the Ruby Frankie case. If you are not familiar with this case, I am currently doing a series, and I highly recommend you go back to my previous podcast episodes that I have done detailing this case. My first podcast episode was focused all on Ruby Frankie. Who is she? What is her family dynamic? The second episode is all about the child abuse charges that she is facing. And then the third episode was more about Jody Hildebrand, her business partner. So those will give you a really good backstory on this case and as to kind of what's going on. And today's podcast episode, we're going to kind of dive into some updates and things regarding the case moving forward. So in today's episode, we're going to talk about the search warrant that was served recently. We're going to talk about some things we've heard from neighbors of Ruby and Jody. We're going to talk a little bit about connections and some stuff that is coming out about connections and the LDS Church. And then we're also going to talk more about Kevin Frankie, which has been a big question on a lot of people's mind is, who is Kevin Frankie? Where is he? What is his relationship to all of this? So we're going to start by detailing this search warrant that was enacted recently at Jody Hildebrand's home. Now, again, Jody Hildebrand is Ruby Frankie's business partner, and she lives in Ivins, Utah. Okay. And Jody lives in Ivins, Utah, and Ruby lives in Springville, Utah. And it's several hours away from each other. But Jody's home in Ivins seemed to be where they were recording a lot of these videos and conducting a lot of this business work for connections. And we know that is where the two children were found, and that is where everything went down. If you're not familiar with that, go back and listen to my second podcast episode in this series. But they conducted a search warrant at Jody Hildebrand's home, and they did take Jody Hildebrand's phone, and they are going to go through that and see what they can get from her phone. Now, another thing that they discovered, which I think is really interesting, was they found cayenne pepper on the wounds of the children. And then inside the house, they found a little like mixing bowl, a little concoction with cayenne pepper and honey. Now, just off the cuff hearing that, I think a lot of people's first reaction is, oh my gosh, they were using cayenne pepper to abuse these children. And that very well may be the case. But upon doing a little research, it is a homeopathic alternative to wound care. If you look online, you can find out that this is an alternate wound care suggestion where you can use cayenne pepper and honey and you can spread it on a wound to help it like heal faster. This is a homeopathic remedy, which homeopathic medicine is in general a little off the beaten path and in some ways goes against traditional science. So I'm not necessarily endorsing homeopathic medicine, but I'm just saying that this is listed as a homeopathic alternative to wound care. Now, we don't know exactly how this was being used in relation to the kids. We don't know if they were using this to try and heal some wounds or if they were truly using it in an abusive manner. We do not know. but it is something that law enforcement listed in the search warrant that they found cayenne pepper and honey on the wounds of these children, these two children. And then they also found this quote-unquote concoction in Jody Hildebrand's home. So again, I feel like there's a little bit of a gray area there as to how that was actually being used, but something that they noted within the search warrant. So we'll have to kind of see what more comes out of that and what more they specifically discover with that. Now, we talked in the last podcast episode about connections and this business, which has apparently, it's kind of unclear how long Connections has truly been running. We found reviews from people going as far back as 10 years ago. So it appears that Connections has been in business for at least 10 years, but it's not super clear at this point how long it has actually been operating. But we know that it was an established business when Ruby joined Jody in Connections. It was already an established business. So that is something that some misinformation that I've been hearing online is that they started this business together, but that is not the case. Connections was already an established business, and Ruby decided to join Jody. And this seemed to happen around the same time that their 8 Passengers YouTube channel went dark. And so she joined Jody and started creating and posting content with Jody under the Connections name and the Moms of Truth name. And so one of the things that, as we're kind of peeling back the layers on Connections and looking at really what was Connections and how was Connections being used, and it was promoted as a counseling service, a counseling business, a therapy business. Jody and Ruby, I know, called themselves mental trainers, mental fitness trainers. So I know they weren't necessarily calling themselves counselors. We do know Jody had a counseling license that was temporarily suspended, and then now it's fully been revoked. But they were using this as a counseling business, as a therapy business, as a way to help people through different struggles. And as we're peeling back these layers, one of the things that we're noticing about Connections is that someone would come to them with a problem that they have, right? Just, you know, how you would seek out a counselor or a therapist, a psychologist. You would seek out one of those professionals, a mental health professional, if you're having trouble, okay? If you're having trouble in your marriage, if you're having trouble maybe with your kids, if you're having trouble personally with some stuff going on at work or some, you know, inner things going on, you can seek out one of these professionals to help you through these problems. And people were going to Connections and seeking out Connections and wanting help and assistance with different problems. And this could be, you know, seemingly anything from someone having an addiction to porn to somebody saying they're having issues with their family or someone having issues at work. So all different kinds of people were seeking out Connections for assistance with their problem. And what Connections was repeatedly telling these people was that that person was the problem, right? If they were coming to them because they had a porn addiction that they wanted to conquer, that person has the problem. They have the porn addiction problem, and they have caused a domino effect onto other people. Or if, you know, somebody came to them with some marital problems, oh, you're the problem. You're causing the rift in the marriage. And they would tell these people not to infect your family with your problem. So you need to distance yourself from your family so you don't infect them with your problem. If you're having a porn addiction, you need to distance yourself from your family. You don't want to affect them with this porn problem. If you're having a marriage issue, you need to distance yourself from your spouse, your wife, your husband, because you don't want to affect them with your problems. That was kind of the common thread that they were telling people, that they were the problem and that they needed to not infect their family with this problem that they have. And so they really pushed for anybody that was in their mental health care to isolate themselves, to separate themselves from their husband or their wife or their family, their kids, whatever that may be. That's what they were pushing as a solution, that, hey, you're the problem. You don't need to be infecting your family, so you need to separate yourself. You need to work on your problems, and you cannot be a part of that family. You're around your spouse, your husband, your wife, whatever it may be, until you fully fixed this problem. And that is what they preached, which is definitely cult-like. If you are familiar with any cults at all, you know that that is very cult-like. One of the main things with cults is isolation. They get people to isolate themselves from everybody else. And they get, in cults specifically, they make people believe that the outside world is evil. That the outside world is evil and is out to get them, and that you don't want to be a part of the outside world. You want to stay right here where you are with all of us who are safe, and you don't want to go to the outside world, which is why cults have compounds. They have compounds with housing and with their church and everything on it, so that these people don't need to leave the compound. They can stay exactly where they are, and they are told that they are safe there because the outside world is evil. Now, this, obviously, Connections didn't have a whole compound. They didn't have all these people living together in one particular area. But you can say that they were still operating like a cult, because they were encouraging all of their Connections followers, all of these people that were paying money for these mental health services, they were encouraging them to isolate themselves from the people that they love the most, and telling them that the only way that they were going to fix this problem that they had was isolating themselves and focusing on their problem. And that definitely is some of the same teachings that cults have. And by looking at this idea of isolating somebody from other people that they love, you can see how this could be a breeding ground for abuse, right? If you encourage a wife to separate herself from her husband, the husband's not there, the husband doesn't see what's going on, or vice versa. If you encourage the husband to separate himself from his wife, then he doesn't see what's going on, right? So that can be a breeding ground for abuse or for problems to fester, right? If other people are not there to see what you're doing, then problems can continue to fester without as many eyes. And this is where we're going to kind of transition into talking about Kevin, because Kevin's lawyer has come out and spoke for him. Kevin is not speaking publicly at this time. His lawyer says that at some point he will speak publicly, but he doesn't believe that now is the appropriate time. So his lawyer is speaking for him. And Kevin has said he was in Connections. He was using Connections for mental health services. And he was brainwashed specifically by Jody. This is what his lawyer has said, that Kevin was brainwashed by Jody. And he was brainwashed and told he needed to be separate from his wife. He could not see his kids. while he worked on these issues that he was dealing with. And that was the only way that things were going to get better, is if he was separate from his wife and his kids. So according to his lawyer, he has not seen his kids in a year. Now, I think we all kind of understand that brainwashing is a repeated cycle, right? It's somebody constantly, over and over, telling someone the same thing and making it so that that person believes it, right? The outside world is evil. Do not leave. The outside world is evil. Do not leave. In a cult, if that is repeated day after day, hour after hour, then yes, people can start to believe that, and that is what brainwashing is. But let's say Jody told Kevin one or two times, hey, I think things would be better if you give Ruby some space, give your kids space, you can focus on this problem. If she told him that one or two times, that probably would not be considered brainwashing, right? So we don't know the extent of that. Per his lawyer, he was brainwashed by Jody, but we don't know the specifics of that. You know, we do know he's an adult, and he was a professor at Brigham Young University. So we would like to believe that he is fairly smart. I mean, you have to be fairly smart to become a professor. So I would like to give him credit in that regard, that he's a smart human being. And so I do have questions regarding that. Like, was he truly brainwashed? Or was that stated once or twice and he wasn't truly brainwashed? I don't know. And I think more will come out in that regard. But part of me feels that if you're a smart individual, you're a smart adult, that, you know, someone telling you that, at first you would be skeptical of that, right? Oh, I'm working through these problems, but I don't think leaving my kids is really the best idea, or leaving my wife is really the best idea. And at least for me, as an adult and a smart individual, I would have questions about that at first, right? And perhaps he did have questions about that and asked those questions, and then that's when it turned to brainwashing. Perhaps that's the case. We don't know. But according to his lawyer, he was brainwashed. And he said he did not see Ruby or his kids for an entire year, for the last year. He said that Ruby called him when all this went down, when the 12-year-old boy went to the neighbor's house, asked for help, and all of that went down, and they went and tracked down Ruby, located her. She called Kevin on the phone and said, I need you, something's going on. And he told her, I'm at work, I'm not available right now, I can't, you know, I can't leave. And then she said, no, it's really bad, you need to come right now. So apparently, according to his lawyer, he left work immediately after she said that, and he drove to their house, and that is obviously, cops were there, and they were dealing with the situation, and per his lawyer, he could not see the kids. They would not allow him to see the kids, and his lawyer said he thinks that PD didn't really know much about the situation at that time, and out of an abundance of caution, they were keeping him away from the kids because they didn't know if he was a part of the abuse. But his lawyer states that he had no idea that these kids were being abused, that he had been separate from his family for an entire year. We don't know the truth of that, right? You can believe him, or you can not believe him and say, I don't know about that. And for me, I think if he truly was absent for an entire year and didn't see those kids a single time, or Ruby or Jody a single time, then yeah, maybe he truly didn't know that anything was going on. But I also tend to believe that abuse is not something that just happens instantly and overnight, right? That's just typically not the case. When a family member is abusing someone, it's over a period of time. And I think in this case, I think it was probably longer than a year of time. And so I think he might have known about some things before he left, before he separated from the family for a year. I think he might know about some things, and he might be aware of some things that happened. That's just my opinion. We don't necessarily have the facts to back that up, but that is just my opinion. And I think those things will start to come out. Truly, did he have any involvement? And if they find out he did have an involvement, then charges could come. But as of right now, there is no evidence to prove that he was involved in any abuse. But when we talked about the first podcast episode on there, talking about the Eight Passengers YouTube channel, there were a lot of subscribers and viewers at that time that were pointing out things on a regular basis that they said, this doesn't seem right. And if you missed that, you can go back and listen to that episode. But there were a lot of specifics that didn't sit right with people, things that were mentioned and brought up in videos that people didn't agree with. And so it really begs to question, because Kevin was a part of that YouTube channel. He was an active part of that YouTube channel. And so if there were questionable things happening back then, and he was a part of it, then there's a chance that he did know some things that were going on. So we'll have to kind of see how that evolves over time. Now, some people have been asking the question of, what is the LDS's church involvement in Connections and in this whole case, right? Now, the Church of Latter-day Saints is a large organization, and I'm never going to pretend to be an expert about the LDS Church. I have never been a member of the LDS Church. I'm not an expert, but I did grow up with several friends in the LDS Church, and I am fairly familiar with a lot of their teachings. And the LDS Church is a large organization, and in seeing how they've handled things in the past, similar to other large religious organizations, the LDS Church always seems to just want to cover things up. They don't want a dark stain on their organization, right? They don't want to lose members. They want to keep gaining members. That's their whole goal, is they want lots of members in their church, lots of people converting to their church. And so they don't want anything that's going to make them look bad. And this case, obviously, is a terrible, horrible case. And I don't think they really want anything to do with it. I don't think they really want to acknowledge it. Because again, it's a dark stain on themselves. And they don't want that. So we have not seen any sort of issue, statement issued at this point from the church. I don't know that we will see any statement issued. I don't think they want to touch this with a 10-foot pole. They don't want to even be associated with it. Now, there have been some people saying the LDS Church might have endorsed Connections and been fully aware of what Jody was doing and promoting it. That is unclear at this time, unvalidated at this time. If it does come out that the LDS Church was promoting Connections and they were endorsing Connections and sending members to Connections for Mental Health, that could become a bigger issue, right? That could certainly become a bigger issue, because we know that Connections was not good and they were doing some pretty bad things and encouraging other people to do some pretty bad things. So that could change things if that came out, that they were actually endorsing Connections and recommending it and sending members there. But we don't know for sure at this point. We have heard that apparently Jody's bishop knew of the abuse. Again, not confirmed. We can't fully confirm that, but we have heard that supposedly Jody's bishop may have known about the abuse, which you then ask yourself, well, why didn't they say anything? But it goes back to the LDS Church not wanting a dark stain on their name. So if this bishop, let's say it's true, and he knew about this abuse going on, if he stood up and said something about it, then that could have looked bad on their church, right? Because, oh, we have a member or multiple members that are abusing children, and they don't want to look bad. And so he wouldn't have said anything. It's also important to note that clergy are not mandated reporters in every state. And in the state of Utah, clergy members, so that includes the LDS Church and other religious churches in Utah, are not mandated reporters. So bishops, pastors, church leaders are not mandated reporters in the state of Utah, which is crazy to me that they are not. Crazy to me that they're not mandated reporters, because they see lots of different people within the church and work with lots of different people within the church. And we've heard in different religious organizations about how power is abused. And I think clergy members should absolutely be mandated reporters. But in the state of Utah, they are currently not. And so, again, unconfirmed if Jody's bishop actually knew about this abuse happening. If it comes out and is confirmed that that's the case, then that will be a larger conversation, and that will definitely put a dark stain on the LDS Church about them hiding and covering up this abuse and not doing something sooner about it when they knew about it. There have also been some statements from neighbors saying that they had called DCFS, Department of Child and Family Services, on occasion for Ruby's kids, right? And one neighbor said that they called because their kids were constantly playing outside by themselves for long periods of time. But Utah has what is known as the free-range parenting rule, where kids are allowed to be outside for long periods of time, and this free-range parenting rule promotes independence and within families. And so because of this rule, they were unable to really do anything. And this DCFS worker told this neighbor that they would have to have proof of actual abuse happening in order for them to move further. So that is also really hard to hear, that people saw something, they said something, and nothing was done. It's unclear regards to family members, who else spoke up. Sisters of Ruby have said that they tried to do everything they could in their will, but again, we don't really know what that means. The oldest daughter, Sherry, has stated she tried to do everything she could in her will. Again, what does that mean? That's a very general statement. So we will have to kind of see as things come out if there is any blame for DCFS and if there is any blame for the LDS Church for not doing something or saying something. And another question that a lot of people have is, was Ruby just a victim of Jody's cult? Was she a victim of Jody's cult? Because a lot of people are saying she was going to Jody for mental health counseling herself and then may have just got roped into her cult. And I think it's possible, right, that Jody could have convinced Ruby and brainwashed her of some of these things. But I also believe that Ruby is a mother. She is an adult, and she has her own mind and her own brain. And I think if she was actively participating in physical and emotional abuse, or witnessing physical and emotional abuse being done to her child, she knew better than that. She knew better than that. If she was doing it, or if she was watching it happen, she would know better. Now, if she truly was brainwashed and she truly never saw any abuse happen to her kids and she never did any abuse on her kids, then it would maybe be a little bit of a different story. And we don't know enough yet to know how involved Ruby was in any of this abuse, but she is facing these 6 child abuse charges. And so we won't really know until it goes to trial and we start hearing information. But I think that Ruby is a mother. I think she knows how you treat kids and how you don't treat kids. And according to some of these old YouTube videos from their 8 Passengers channel, it sounds like she already was headed towards this path at that time of different parenting styles that were not in the best interest of the children. And so I do believe at this point that Ruby was active in the abuse, as well as Jody, but we will have to see how things play out. I appreciate you all listening to this podcast episode. Again, if you haven't hit the subscribe button, please do so wherever you're listening to this podcast episode so you can get updated and a notification whenever I post a new podcast episode. You can also leave a review. This helps me out a ton and boost my listenership. And you can always hit the share button and share this podcast episode on your social media pages or with anyone that you think would be interested in this case. I will be covering the entirety of this case. So as things progress, as we get new developments, I will definitely have new podcast episodes to keep you in the loop. Thank you all for listening. We'll talk again soon.